The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Larry Fitzgerald Sr. will be on today's show. Fitz Sr. has been a staple of Cardinal games through the years, and obviously to see his son play. Larry Fitzgerald Sr. is based in Minneapolis and everything around the Vikings. He's columnist for the Minnesota Spokesman and Recorder. Larry Fitzgerald Sr. on Kirk Cousins, on Patrick Peterson, how they've looked, how they've played. Kirk Cousins refusing to get vaccinated, how that's gone over, how Patrick Peterson is preparing to meet DeAndre Hopkins and A.J. Green and the like, Christian Kirk too, this coming Sunday. So Fitz Sr. with us. Looking forward to that. Michael Fabiano, so your fantasy football team got crushed. Your fantasy football team's all beat up. Whatever it may be, today is Overreaction Tuesday to fantasy football with Fabs. Michael Fabiano, the best of the best, the Hall of Famer with SiriusXM and Sports Illustrated. He will join us and we'll talk fantasy football and take some of your questions. And then we're going to have Mitch Stroman with us from Northern Arizona University, the longtime voice of the Lumberjacks. NAU goes to Tucson to play U of A this Saturday night. And while most of the eyes in the state, I think, are going to be on ASU and BYU, it's really interesting. NAU's 0-2 and U of A's 0-2. And yeah, NAU's an FCS team. U of A should beat them. But did you see what Montana did to Washington a couple of weeks ago? Did you see that? And what is Mitch's view of what Chris Ball is being able to accomplish in Flagstaff as they get ready for the game on Saturday night in Tucson? So we have Mitch Stroman as well. Looking forward. I love today's show. I really like every segment of today's show, unless I screw this one up. So I hope I don't, and I don't think I will. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. I watched Eli and Peyton last night over on ESPN2. You know, Monday Night Football, through the years, they've gone through this, I don't know, plethora of announcers and trying different things. And for the most part, it hasn't worked. I happen to like the current crew that they have on Monday Night Football, but I wanted to see something different. You know, we're always looking for that next, what is going to click, what is going to fit when it comes to media. And so last night, ESPN did something that I thought was really smart. They put a broadcast together of Peyton Manning in one place and brother Eli Manning in another place. And the two of them chopped it up while the game was going on. They didn't do the traditional first and 10 at the 25-yard line. And I loved it. Maybe it's because I've consumed football for so long. Maybe it's because I consume football for so much of the weekend. Friday night high school, Saturday college, Sunday the NFL, Monday the NFL. Actually go to last Thursday with the opener with the Bucks and the Cowboys. I'd consumed a ton of football. And if you can make it go different, and give me something different than just the same old stuff, okay? And they did. And I really liked it. I don't know about you. I really liked it. I liked having Charles Barkley show up. I like whatever Charles shows up on anything, for him to show up in a Raiders jersey and to talk about his little time of being a football player and getting on Eli about, Eli was talking about players complaining. He says, and Charles like, man, you haven't watched anything. You've seen the NBA because that's all they do. And he's right. And it was great. It was beautiful to have Ray Lewis drop in and Russell Wilson drop in. It was just a completely different way to watch the game. It felt like it was fans of football hanging out together. You know, I flipped over for the conclusion of the game, and it was a terrific ending. What can you say about last night's Raiders-Ravens ending? It was so many twists and turns. But for me, for about two and a half hours, I was there. And that's got to be hard for those two. It's got to be hard. Eli's fire alarm went off during the broadcast. I don't know if it was intentional or not, just to get attention on social media. I don't know. I have that little conspiracy theory in the back of my head. Hey, let's have something like his fire alarm goes off. And then there's, ooh. And then guys like me talk about it, or people take it and put it out on social and all that stuff. So very entertaining. Very entertaining to watch them. And I hope that there's more of that. I really do. In terms of the Cardinals getting ready for Minnesota, so I think think Minnesota may be a little bit of where the Cardinals were in the first quarter of last week's game at Tennessee. Those that watched the Cardinals game in the opening quarter, it was forgettable. It was penalties all over the place. It was sloppy, ugly football. The Vikings were much the same way. They had 11 penalties on their offense alone. Kirk Cousins averaged 6.1 yards per attempt. They were in third down 9 times, and they had to be to get 10 yards. They were in third and 10 or more 9 times in that game. If that happens this Sunday, then Chandler Jones is going to double his sack total, right? They had 6 plays of third and 15. So the Vikings just weren't good, and maybe that's a byproduct of not getting enough reps in fake football in August. So regardless, Minnesota comes here, and I want to see what Patrick Peterson does out on the football field. He'll be greeted warmly, but what will that matchup against DeAndre Hopkins and A.J. Green, what will it look like, in particular with Hopkins? It's fascinating to me as we get into this week how that will go. Kirk Cousins puts up a lot of yards, but what have the Vikings done? Have the Vikings really done anything? If you're a diehard Vikings fan, and there's a lot of you out here, you know, really, what have the Vikings done with Kirk Cousins? Dalvin Cook, terrific player. Big challenge for the Cardinal defense. You know, on Chandler Jones' front, so some people have reached out because I put some stuff up on Twitter on Sunday about Steve Keim on line one is Chandler Jones' agent. And, you know, as the sacks were piling up and the strips were up, and Chandler Jones is not talking to the media. Now, early in my career, I felt like, you know, you should have an obligation to explain yourself. And remember when Arizona State tried to protect Vontaze Burfict from all the nonsense that he was causing within that football program? They wouldn't let him be interviewed, and it was just a complete bleep show with them. It was. So here's Chandler Jones, where the Cardinals and Chandler Jones just can't seem to figure it out. The Cardinals, from my view, from what I can see, don't want to pay him because he's 31 years of age. He's not Joey Bosa, I get that, but he's a defensive lineman. That's what he is. He's not a linebacker. When people say he's a linebacker, I would beg to differ on that. You know, Von Miller got $19 million off of a Super Bowl. Is Chandler Jones right there? He's coming off an injury last season. He looks great. He looks terrific. I'm not expecting Chandler Jones to go get 5 sacks. I have to wonder what it's like for the Cardinals front office. When Chandler Jones goes out and produces like that, does it make them squeamish? Does it make them squirm? Or it's just, hey, this is the way it's going to be. He's going to play this year, and he's going to move on. He'll be 32 years of age, and it's just, hey, thank you very much for your contributions. But if he goes out and he has another game like he did last week, you know, what is the message that you're sending within the locker room to these players? And that may sound Pollyanna, because I do agree that professional sports, in the NFL, it's 53 lockers, which are really 53 corporations on 53 different islands. That's what it is. And Danny Ainge told me that great line about the NBA years and years and years ago. It's all different corporations. They're just housed in different lockers. And so Myles Garrett, Chandler Jones is not. Joey Bosa, Chandler Jones is not. But Chandler Jones will be NFC Defensive Player of the Week today. He's not talking. He's not happy with the organization. The organization isn't saying anything. And it's just this stalemate of, look, I get it. A year ago, they had to figure out what to do with DeAndre Hopkins and his contract. I understand that. Buda Baker's big contract comes up. But if you feel like you just can't find two nickels to rub together, I really don't know what message you want to send to the rest of the players when a guy like this comes out and produces. It's crazy. USC firing Clay Helton yesterday is bad news for Arizona State and U of A. Less so for U of A because they're never going to win the Pac-12, it feels like. But it's bad news for ASU. USC has been mired in mediocrity just like Arizona State. They get all excited at ASU to win 7 or 8 games and go to El Paso. Out at USC, they win 8, 9 games, and that's what they've dealt with Clay Helton. It's amazing to me. You can have an athletic director that can go through an offseason and then two games in say, yeah, you're done. It's got to be bigger cigars above the athletic director that came down the hall and said, no, we're not going to tolerate this anymore. We're not. I saw Matt Leinart's tweet during the game that this is unacceptable and all that stuff. The former Trojans, this is USC. Whether you like USC or not, this is a program that is so steeped in tradition and heritage. They are. And with the new television contract coming up for the Pac-12 and your marquee program is floundering, no, you have to go put sizzle and glitz back into USC. That's bad news for Arizona State, who just seems perfectly content to win 7 or 8 games and go to second-tier bowl games. Shouldn't happen. Got to aspire to be higher. Put that on a shirt. So Clay Helton gets fired, and 2 games in, and the legs of the AD get cut off, from my view. And guys like James Franklin at Penn State, Chris Peterson being talked about. The first guy I'd call, I mentioned him yesterday to Wilner, is Mario Cristobal. You call Mario Cristobal, and it's, look, I know Miami's going to call him at some point because of the job that he's doing, and he's from Miami. That's his deal. But this is USC. You can be the one that turns this thing around. You know, is it Matt Campbell? Matt Campbell's done a nice job at Iowa State. Nice job. He's never beaten Iowa. Hasn't beat his rival. Is Matt Campbell a Southern California guy? He's recruited very well. Done a great job. But is he the right fit? And so here's this plum of a plum. This is Notre Dame's job coming open. This is Alabama's. Whether you hate USC or not, that's how big this job is. It's a much bigger job than Arizona State. It is. So very interested to see what happens on that. But just a terrible way to handle it if you're USC 2 games in. You didn't know this last January? I mean, it's 7 years of this. And these people get paid the decimal points way down the line. We are headed to BYU. Claudia Faust and myself headed to BYU for the ASU-BYU game, thanks to Tim Hovick over at Santan Ford. Tim says, I want you to go on every road trip at Arizona State that Arizona State has this year for football. Are you interested? I said, absolutely I am. So we will be in Provo, Utah, starting on Friday and right through the game, and lots of content here on the stream and also up on the website. All right, up next, Larry Fitzgerald Sr. Yeah, I got to ask him about what's going on with his son and much more. We will do that with Larry Fitzgerald Sr. That is next. All right, as promised, let's take a deeper dive into the Minnesota Vikings. They come to the Valley this Sunday. Cardinals trying to improve to 2-0. Vikings looking for their first win after coming up short in overtime. And Larry Fitzgerald Sr. is back with us. Columnist, editor, Minnesota spokesman, recorder, Fitz Beat Sr. You can find him on Twitter and check out all of his thoughts and content. It is good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing well. How you been?
I've been good. I actually have a football team that got off to a good start out here the other day. So it'll be interesting to see what Sunday is all about. What is the vibe, the feel, your observations on the Vikings after 1 week?
Well, disappointing. The preseason was a wash. They didn't get much accomplished at all. They were 0-3 and you didn't get to see anybody. This is a team with 11, 12 players that have previously been Pro Bowlers. So they usually go into a season, this being the state's most popular sports franchise, with high expectations that they eventually are going to get closer to fulfilling a vision of winning a world championship. That's something that they've never done. And, you know, when I first moved to this market, the Vikings were making annual trips to the Super Bowl. I think they had gone 4 times before 1978, but they haven't had a sniff since. But they've had some really good teams. They got a lot of players in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And so expectations are for them to have a team that that can go out and get it done and can win. And but they just seem to have issues, at least in their 61 years that I've recognized, against particularly AFC teams. They seem to do well in the NFC against opponents, but when they play the AFC teams, they just can't seem to get it done. So they were 0-3 against three AFC opponents in the preseason, and the first game against Cincinnati, a team that I don't think they've won a playoff game in 30 years, but Minnesota couldn't beat them on the road on a hot Sunday last week.
Mike Zimmer's, it's interesting to see his team and the faith that is put into Kirk Cousins. Is it at a point where he's got to move this thing further ahead, to your point earlier about they were a team that got this far? Is the time starting to run through the hourglass on Kirk Cousins and the Vikings, I guess, is the question.
Well, they've invested a lot of money in him. I mean, remember initially he signed as a free agent, a 3-year unprecedented $84 million guaranteed contract. So he's gone through that. They've had one playoff team with him as their starting quarterback. He's been quite durable. He's played basically every game. He's over the last 6 years, he's one of the most productive quarterbacks in the league. If you look at his numbers, he's averaged throwing for over 3,500 yards passing and at least 25 touchdown passes or more in six straight years. And not many quarterbacks can go away saying that. But having said that, as I mentioned, he's been in the playoffs one time. They've won one playoff game. They won at New Orleans 2 years ago against Drew Brees and the Saints, who were 13-3 that year. But last year they were just 7-9. They did a lot of good things offensively, but the defense just was just couldn't get it done. They couldn't stop anybody. They allowed 475 points. But this year they've got some of those guys back on the defensive side. They think that they're going to be improved. But again, Cincinnati ran very effectively against them, moved the ball. Joe Burrow, who was a number one overall pick in the league a couple of years ago, he did well. They didn't put much pressure on him, and they were chasing him. The Bengals led by as much as 21-7. So there's still a lot to prove, and Viking fans are wondering if this team can do something that they anticipate they should be able to do.
Larry Fitzgerald Sr. with us for a couple of minutes as we talk about the Vikings coming to the Valley on Sunday. Patrick Peterson, how has he performed? How has he fit in there with the Vikings?
So far, so good. Joe Burrow and the Bengals didn't even look his way last week, much less throw a ball in that area. They chose to go at Breland on the other side, and with great success. Breland seems to be a cornerback who tends to look into the backfield a lot and gives a lot of cushion as a cornerback, and like he's expecting or anticipating help from the backside in terms of safeties. But Cincinnati had a great deal of success against him, and so he has to definitely improve this week if the Viking defense is to be better.
When you look at Patrick coming back here, you've sat in the press box. We've sat next to each other for many of those games in Glendale. And you're going to have Patrick Peterson on one side, and whether it's A.J. Green or DeAndre Hopkins on the other, what are you expecting Sunday to be like just in those matchups?
Well, I can tell you that Patrick's got to be excited about it. He's that type of player. He's always brought a big game mentality, mindset to every game that I've ever seen him play. And he's with great result for the most part, from what I've seen when he's put on that Cardinal uniform. And so far he seems to bring that type of an expectation to this Viking defense. And I know that returning Sunday to the desert, he's got to be looking forward to it, although we haven't had a chance to talk to him about it in terms of this week yet. But I believe he will be highly excited,
yep,
and charged up to come home to the desert and show that he can still play some football. And I think it's going to be one of the best challenges of his career.
Yeah, I think everybody out here is looking forward to it. Before I get you out of here, and it's the obvious questions around, you're going to be at the stadium. I would assume you're coming out, right, for the game?
No, I've decided not to come, and for several reasons. But I just decided that I didn't want to be in my position. I've been in this business, you know, four decades. I've covered 40 Super Bowls, and I don't like being part of the show. And I just anticipate that, obviously, in view of the incredible career that that Larry Jr. had with the Arizona Cardinals, and it being up in the air, why he's not with the Cardinals this year, and why shouldn't he be with the Cardinals this year? I don't want to be bothered by, you know, that type of continual attempt to get something out of me that he hasn't cleared.
Yeah, no, and I get it. I saw Larry down in Tucson at a golf event in February. I heard he was going to play in a pro-am down there. And so I drove down and he comes over and says, "Hey, Brad," and we have a couple nice pleasantries. And then you have to ask the question in our spot, you know, "Where are you at?" And he said, "I'm just here to play golf." And fortunately, he was playing with Marcus Allen, and he was playing with Richard Dent, and he was playing with Pudge Rodriguez. So I was able to ask all three of them right next to Larry, what's Larry going through and how's he going through it and all that stuff. And then I walked nine holes and watched Larry, and we talked a little bit out there too. And it's he's got his own journey, as you know, as a proud father. And I totally get it. This will be the first game you've missed, I would think, in Phoenix in a long time. I've seen you almost every Cardinal game through the years.
Absolutely. It's been a long time, 17 plus. I've always enjoyed the opportunity. You know, I got other grandchildren out there as well. But, you know, COVID's had some things to do with it also, the travel restrictions and that type of thing. We're still not totally open, as you know, yet.
Right.
But when you put that into it, that was big for me. That I made that call at least early in the season.
Yeah. And as Kirk, I'm going to go back on football and I'll let you go. Kirk Cousins' stance on not getting vaccinated, that's gotten a lot of attention. Where's that at now?
Well, quietly, everybody that's opinionated about it knows that I think I saw a stat the other day where if you're unvaccinated, the chances are 11% greater that you'll die of COVID-19 than if you are vaccinated. So in this state, and as far as I know across the country, a lot of folks really frown on individuals who come up with stances for why they should not get vaccinated. And you know, he put himself out there by saying that if I die, I die. And so that's not something that's very popular, but people that are Viking fans have their fingers crossed, even though they want the Vikings to win. They still have concerns about that.
Yeah. Hey, I appreciate your time as always and taking a few minutes to chop it up. And stay safe, stay well, and again, appreciate the visit. Thanks.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
There's Larry Fitzgerald Sr. with us for a couple of minutes, and we're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, he knows all, he tells all, he is the Hall of Famer. It is Michael Fabiano, and it is Overreaction Monday, actually Overreaction Tuesday, after a great game last night. Fantasy football inside and out with Sports Illustrated and Sirius XM Fantasy Dirt. First overreaction from Michael Fabiano to the fantasy weekend.
I have no overreactions. This is, for me, reassurance week. That's what it is in fantasy football, because everyone's freaking out about Aaron Rodgers and everyone's freaking out about Zeke and everyone's freaking out about Najee Harris and Mike Evans and Kyle Pitts. Folks, it's 1 week. It's like Groundhog Day. Every year, week two, I have to say the same thing. Don't worry about it. Things happen. Every game's not going to be a gem. The Rodgers thing was brutal. I never in a million years thought that Marcus Mariota on one run would score more fantasy points than Aaron Rodgers the entire weekend, but it is what it is. So the good news is that Rodgers has the Lions next week, so you'll be fine. But continue to play your studs, and what I would suggest is, and I'm going to be posting some videos on Sports Illustrated later in the week, you got to keep tabs on the trends. You got to keep tabs on the backfield trends. You got to keep tabs on who's playing how many snaps and how many targets they're getting, how many touches they're getting. Those are the important numbers. At the end of the day, Zeke Elliott played, what, 70 snaps? I mean, Najee Harris played every single snap for the Steelers. That's good.
Right.
He didn't score very many points, but Buffalo's defense is good, and the Steelers' offensive line is not. I can promise you right now, he will do better against the Raiders coming up this week.
All right, so here's some of the overreactions I am getting from people in the mailbag. And some of them are going to bang on me a little bit. You know, I heard you guys talk about Sony Michel. I picked up Sony Michel. I started Sony Michel. Sony Michel didn't play. Well, it is week one. And yeah, Sony Michel didn't see the field to save his life. So this guy wants to drop Sony Michel after week one. Where are you at on that, Fabs?
Nobody said to start Sony Michel. Like, Darrell Henderson was always going to be the guy this week because Michel just got traded. So he had like three touches and they're all in the fourth quarter. Henderson's the guy to start right now. Give it time, right? What happened with Baltimore last night? Latavius Murray just signed. He'll end up being their guy, I think, at some point. It'll be a split between him and Tyson Williams. But Williams started the game. Why? Because Murray just signed with the team. Now, Murray got a lot of work in the second half, a heck of a lot more than Sony Michel did, but it takes time. It's not like these guys can be traded or signed with a new team and then boom, they're going to be effective. It doesn't work that way. So Sony Michel is rosterable without question. I would never drop him at this point. But, I mean, you're not playing him right now. You got to wait. You got to wait until he gets into the rotation. I tell you, the Rams do not want to use Darrell Henderson as a 20 touch per week guy because he won't last that long.
Okay, Le'Veon Bell. Get a lot of questions about, again, Ravens backfield and Le'Veon Bell. Some people picked him up late on waivers.
I didn't. I won't, because I think Williams and Murray are going to be the top two guys. And that was the case last night. And Bell may or may not be activated off the practice squad. I'm guessing he would be, right? They also have Devontae Freeman there. Don't forget. Right. So
crowded.
It is crowded, but it's crowded with, like, two guys who are way past their prime, and Latavius Murray, who's certainly not at the peak of his career, let's put it that way, but Murray is the best back. Keep in mind, folks, Le'Veon Bell signed with the Jets for a lot of money, and they got rid of him after less than a year and a half. And then the Chiefs signed him, and he wasn't very good. And this entire offseason, nobody wanted him. Devonta Freeman, last year with the Giants, didn't look that great, okay? Signs with the Saints, who don't have a lot of backfield depth, and they cut him. And now he goes to the Ravens, who are desperate. The Ravens are desperate. They lost their top three running backs to injuries in like a two-week span. So, if you want to pick him up, Bell is a speculative ad, okay, but I'm not rushing out to the waiver wire to go get him.
Michael Fabiano with us. You can find Michael's content over on SiriusXM Fantasy Dirt and, of course, on SportsIllustrated.com, SI.com. It's good to have Fabs with us every week. Okay, 49ers, the injury early. Now Elijah Mitchell's out there. The waiver wire this week. Sort through the 49er backfield there, Fabs.
Mitchell's going to be the hottest name off the waiver wire, and rightly so because he's a Niners running back. But I got to tell you, Brad, I don't know that backfield situation is really cut and dry, because Trey Sermon was inactive. Keep that in mind, right? Mm-hmm. Trey Sermon was inactive. They lost Raheem Mostert. Now he's going to be out for 8 weeks. Jamichael Hasty was also in the mix. And Jeffrey Wilson Jr. will come off the injured list at some point, maybe in the next month, maybe 5 weeks. So it's going to muddy the waters. And honestly, like, if the Niners lined up against the Eagles this weekend and Trey Sermon was the starter, I wouldn't be surprised, right? Because the fact that Elijah Mitchell was active and Sermon wasn't doesn't necessarily mean that he's ahead of Sermon on the depth chart. It just means that Kyle Shanahan thought that Mitchell was more prepared for the game from a health perspective, because Sermon's been dealing with a few bumps and bruises. And so I would fully expect Sermon to be active moving forward. And this may be a committee. It really might. Like, mm-hmm. that's what the Niners do. Like, if you remember back to, like, Mike Shanahan, like, you know, we had the whole Shanahanigans thing, right? Yeah. Where, you know, sometimes it was this back, sometimes it was this back, and, you know, we really didn't know. We may end up getting right back to that situation where we're not really sure exactly who is going to be the top guy on a week-to-week basis. Maybe it's a hot-hand situation, and hot-hand situations suck in fantasy football. But unfortunately, they could be part of the game here with the Niners. So certainly put in a claim for Mitchell. I mean, don't get me wrong. He looked really good. It was the Lions, though, too. So don't go bananas. Don't blow your entire fab budget on Elijah Mitchell.
Okay, so what about Gainwell in Philadelphia? You know, I'm looking at this with Miles mm-hmm. Sanders. And where are you at on that one?
Gainwell is the two. It seems that he has passed Boston Scott as the number two running back. So I think Gainwell needs to be owned across the board. As a backup, it's not like you're going to start this guy. And they've got the Niners coming up next. But the fact of the matter is, if Sanders goes down, I think Gainwell could play a pretty big role and split time with Scott there in that backfield. But Gainwell, you know, had the touchdown. But again, it's Atlanta. Their defense is terrible. So, I mean, like, sometimes you got to take these performances with a grain of salt, right? The one that blew my mind was Jameis.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. This guy should be the spokesperson for LASIK. Before he gets LASIK, he's throwing 30 picks as the Buccaneers guy. And his first start as a Saint after LASIK, 5 touchdowns against the Packers.
Right.
Like, unbelievable performance. So that one shocked me in terms of, like, a player who I didn't think was going to have a great game because of the defensive matchup. I mean, if you told me Rodgers was going to have 5 touchdowns and Jameis was going to have 2 picks, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
That makes sense, yeah.
But flipped on its ear, it was surprising.
Couple other names on waivers this week. Tony Jones Jr. Look at that one a little bit.
He's definitely worth an add if you have Alvin Kamara because you want to have the handcuff. Right. And I think he's worth a speculative add because if Kamara should go down, and let's hope that never happens, Jones would end up playing a pretty big role in that offense. When you see a number two back getting touches, I mean, he didn't get a ton of touches, but he got enough touches to kind of open our eyes, and he looked good in the preseason. So certainly a rosterable asset, but you're not going to start him.
And Sterling Shepard.
Well, he should be owned. I mean, he should be owned in most leagues. And I'm not surprised. I had Shepard ranked ahead of Galladay last week. Why? Mm-hmm. Rapport. Like, Daniel Jones knows Sterling Shepard's tendencies. Daniel Jones does not really know Kenny Galladay's tendencies because they didn't get a lot of time to work together because Galladay was hurt all preseason.
One other waiver wire, and then I'll get you out of here with a couple other questions. And, okay. Of course, you can find Fabs over on SI.com, and it's SiriusXM Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, with us. Injury at quarterback in Washington. What do you make out of it?
Stinks. And you're going to have Taylor hit him with the Heineke, as the Howard Stern Show would say, under center. And, you know, Heineke opened a lot of eyes with mm-hmm. that postseason performance against the Buccaneers last year. But I feel like he's a downgrade in a lot of ways from Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick was a veteran guy. You know, he's had success in the league, likes to throw the football downfield. Heineke's obviously a lot less experienced than Fitzpatrick. I'm not going to downgrade Terry McLaurin or Logan Thomas significantly, but I do prefer Fitzpatrick. Obviously, the football team did as well. But it's a situation where Heineke now, if you're in a 2QB or Superflex league, is going to be worth a look. Because that position, well, let's put it that way. I mean, when you get down to the bottom and you're looking for a third quarterback, even Taylor Heineke's probably going to be a guy who would have gotten drafted very late, but would have been drafted in those leagues. If you're in a traditional league, he won't be worth picking up off the waiver wire.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some people ask about Jared Goff that's available in some leagues.
Yeah, I mean, Goff, like, so here's the thing. And you know I'm not a fan. Like, I'm sure he's a wonderful human being. I'm just not a fan of him as a quarterback. But when you play on a crappy team – with a bad defense, game script and garbage time are going to be in the equation. And that's what Goff did. I mean, his wide receivers barely got targeted. It was the running backs and TJ Hockenson. The running backs got targeted 20 times combined. Like, that's bananas. And then Hockenson had double-digit targets. Goff this week's got the Packers. Now, if the Packers have any pride for themselves whatsoever or any respect, they're going to go out on Monday Night Football and stomp the Lions. Stomp them. That's if they have any respect for themselves. And I would think they do. LaFleur's got to get that team fired up because they were embarrassed. And now you're on Monday Night Football at Lambeau Field against maybe one of the worst teams in the league, you better go out there and kick their butt. So will Goff have value during the course of the season at times? Yes, absolutely. It's going to be really hard to figure it out, though, right? Because, like, you don't want to start a quarterback based on the assumption that he'll be in a negative game script and garbage time will be his friend. That was the case this past week. And the Niners, when they were boat racing the Lions, like, they relaxed their defense. And that happens. And they almost paid for it because the Lions almost came back and tied the game. But I'm still not a fan of Jared Goff. Like, two QB league superflex leagues, I get it. I mean, he should have been rostered very likely already. But it's hard to go out there and suggest Jared Goff, especially this week against Green Bay, after they should be good and pissed after getting embarrassed by the Saints.
Okay, one other quarterback. I'm getting a lot of questions in the mailbag on. That's Tyrod Taylor.
Well, what did I say last week? I said, if you need a second quarterback in a 2QB league or a super flex league, or if you need a DFS option because you want to go cheap, Tyrod Taylor's worth a look. And he had a good game.
Yep.
Listen, the Jaguars stink. I'm sorry. Like, they were terrible. Like, this is the Texans we're talking about. If that was the Chiefs or the Cowboys, an offensive juggernaut that did that, the Jags, okay, yeah, I mean, I get it. This was the Texans. Like, all three running backs scored against them. Brandon Cooks had a great game against them. The Jaguars still stink. Offensively, Trevor Lawrence had a decent game because why? Well, negative game script. DJ Chark had a big game. He had the one big catch, right? Marvin Jones had that last play touchdown that helped the stat line. Laviska Shenault had seven catches. So but the running backs, boy, don't let me get into James Robinson, Urban Meyer, please.
Yeah.
But
you were big on him.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Carlos Hyde gets more touches than James Robinson. I mean, I get that you knew him from Ohio State, but come on, Urban, you're bananas. I don't know how long he's going to keep that job if that continues. But the bottom line here is that now Houston's going to Cleveland, and Cleveland just got beat by Kansas City in front of a national TV audience. I would not start Tyrod Taylor this week. Even in a 2QB league, I'd be wary of him. I like that he can give you some mobility and give you some rushing yards. But boy, the Browns are going to be mad. They're going to be in a bad state. They're going to be at home. They're a much better team, than what Houston just faced.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the schedule this week. I know you do starts and sits. Then they're going to be put out later in the week. Sitting here on a Tuesday talking, is there a player you're like, man, what a great matchup this is going to be? And I'm sure you have 10 of them, but I'm only thinking.
Yeah, I do have. I certainly do have a bunch of them. But again, this is reassurance week. Okay. Aaron Rodgers, who sucked last week, and he'd tell you he sucked. You got to play him. He's playing Detroit. You're playing all your Packers this week, right? Because the matchup's really good. The Browns, outside of the backfield, nobody really did anything. I mean, David Njoku had a pretty good game. I don't know if OBJ is going to play this week, but they've got a really good matchup against Houston, right? So Baker Mayfield, who in fantasy was not good last week, he's got a good matchup. I mean, he's a really good QB2 this week. So the teams that I'm picking on right now, especially Jacksonville. So you got the Broncos this week, Atlanta, and Atlanta's got Tampa Bay. Forget it. I mean, Tampa Bay is going to destroy that team. Their offensive line is garbage. Matt Ryan he should take a life insurance policy out of himself this week, because the Buccaneers are going to crush him. Those are a couple of the defense. And even, like I said, Houston's not any good. I mean, come on.
I'm telling you, Minnesota's going to get pounded by Chandler Jones and the Cardinals this week.
Yeah, oh, my God. Kyler Murray crushed me in a couple of leagues this week by himself. Two leagues. I didn't lose many matchups this week. You know, I'm in 14 leagues, though, so whatever.
14 teams.
It's too many. So, Kyler, in two of the games that I lost, Kyler whipped my behind. Jerry Cantrell beat me in the Allison Chains League this week because of Kyler Murray. So, What I am particularly looking for in that game, because Minnesota's not great on the defensive side of the football. We saw Jamar Chase and T. Higgins both have pretty good games, and Joe Mixon had a great game against the Vikings last week.
Yep.
And the Vikings revamped their defensive backfield, but, I mean, to what extent? They didn't really look all that great, and it was the Bengals last week, right? So Kyler Murray, geez Louise, I mean, five touchdowns. Chase Edmonds looked really good. He split the workload with James Conner, but he had more touches and more fantasy points, or more snaps and more fantasy points, excuse me. Rondale Moore, he's an exciting player. Only played 20 snaps, though. And AJ Green, I think, had 55 snaps, and he just, I don't know. Nobody drafted Christian Kirk, and he had 2 touchdowns. So, I mean, like, you know, that, I think that's going to be the case. Like, Nuke's always going to get his, and then who's second and third and fourth behind him is going to end up being a week-to-week scenario. So it'll be hard to maybe gauge the Cardinals receivers. You're certainly not starting Christian Kirk on a week-to-week basis. But the matchup this week's good against the Vikings. So that Cardinals offense is going to be fun. All the teams in the West won this week, which is bananas. AFC and NFC. That's pretty bananas.
Yeah. We're in a space out here where there's actually a little bit of optimism, because being 1-0 just doesn't happen out here.
So. They should. They're good. The Cardinals are good. Say,
here's the stat for you for your shows, okay?
Yeah.
The biggest Cardinal margin of victory, fourth largest in the history of the franchise. Last time they won by that margin or greater, 1964. I wasn't alive, and neither were you.
No,
so that's
no.
What last Sunday was for this team.
So in 64, were they the Chicago Cardinals or the St. Louis Cardinals?
I think they're St. Louis. I think they were St. Louis by then. I could be wrong.
All right.
I could be wrong on my Cardinal history, because there's not much history.
Yeah. Cardinals, back in the day, the 80s, those are great uniforms. The great uniforms. I mean, the uniforms now are okay, but you go back to the Neil Lomax and, you know, the Roy Green and the Otis Andersons. Oh, Danny Erwes all day long. I love
Tom
it.
Banks.
You can see I've got all the old helmets behind me.
Yeah. Right?
I've got a bunch more coming in too. I love those 80s and 70s helmets, man. Those are the best.
You have to improve your set and just get rid of the jerseys behind you.
No, what do you mean?
So,
I mean, by the way, I'm going to the game this weekend. I'm going to SoFi, Cowboys, Chargers,
man,
out here in Englewood.
I can't even imagine you at a Cowboy game. I can't even imagine.
I haven't been to a Cowboys game in years. Like the last,
huh? You paint your face?
No. What am I, Buddy from Seinfeld? I don't do that. No.
Wear the hat?
I'll wear a Cowboys t-shirt, a Cowboys sweater, or something like that. But it's going to be fun.
Sober? Or are you going to be? Are you?
I don't drink. I'm not one of the dopes.
You're not going to be sane. You're just going to be sober.
No, I'll be fine. And you know what? Yeah. I'm bringing Matthew, you know, my son. So this is his first football game. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to go and meet up with Jim Nantz in the CBS booth. So wow, I've never met Tony Romo. So I'll meet him.
Names.
That'll be fun.
Do you take your son and say the only way that you're going to exist in this household with me
is
to be a Cowboy fan?
Like, he's not a big...
If he came home and said, I'm a Giants fan, would we have a problem?
He's not a big football guy. Like, he's not a big football fan. I'm trying to get the influence. I took him to training camp in Oxnard, and now I'm taking him to a first game. No, he's not. Right now, he's into video games and skateboarding. I mean, like, that's what kids are into these days. So that is what it is.
Doesn't he see the Cowboys choke one away? It's fun.
He will. He will wear a Cowboys shirt, though. I can promise you that.
Get out of here. See you later.
Later, pal.
There's Fabs, and we're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, let's turn the spotlight now to NAU and U of A, battle of 0-2 teams in Tucson, and really, I think, crucial for both teams in certain ways, shapes, and forms. Longtime voice, 20-plus years, Mitch Stroman has been the voice of the Lumberjacks and is involved in a lot of areas with the university. He joins us via Zoom for a couple of minutes. 0-2, but you took on the defending national champs in Sam Houston, and last week a tough one on the road. Where are you at right now with the team?
Well, you're right about all that, Brad, and it's great to see you. Great to be with you from here in Flagstaff. We're 0-2. Arizona's obviously 0-2. Arizona's on a 14-game losing streak coming into the game Saturday in Tucson. We're looking for our first win of the season. So I think your earlier point in the question about how this is an important game for both teams and both programs is spot on. And for obviously the Cats, they're trying to get things moving in something that resembles a positive direction with the new head coach, and with a 14-game losing streak, they're desperate. And they're playing an FCS team in NAU, so the expectation for them is that they should be able to beat us, period, right? For us, we came off of a very successful spring season, Brad, where we went 3-2. We were one single Hail Mary pass at Weber State away from being 4-1 and co-champs of the Big Sky Conference playoffs. So a very successful spring season. So we quick turnaround for Chris Ball, head coach of the Lumberjacks, and this football team. Very quick turnaround. you're right. We started against the number one team in the country in the FCS level, the defending national champs, Sam Houston Bearcats here in Flagstaff. And we were with those guys for about two and a half quarters, down 11, driving. And then we throw a pick six and it kind of shifted and it was all over from that point. Went on the road last Saturday, Brad, to Vermilion, South Dakota. Took on a really tough physical Missouri Valley Football Conference team in the University of South Dakota Coyotes. A rough game for us there. They definitely had the better of us in that game. So we're looking for that first win. So where are we right now? We're looking for that first win. And it's huge to get that first win on the scoreboard now. If there's any chance of beating Arizona, you know, hey, that would be a monumental win for this program. It would send us into Big Sky Conference play in a week against Northern Colorado with quite a bit of momentum. So, yeah, I think that this is an intriguing matchup between two teams that are very hungry, ravenously so, to put the W in the win column.
Yeah, it's a week where Chris Ball is showing Montana beating Washington, right?
Right.
And that's you're in a space where it looks like in Chris's third season, he's doing everything correct. We knew Chris, of course, when he was at ASU and have seen him a couple of times on their trail. And from your view, because you've been there, you've seen this program for so many years, is he close? Is he, he's about halfway there. Is, you know, year three, you want to see this thing start to turn. And is he close in that regard from your view?
Yes. Unequivocally, I can answer that question, yes, Brad, and I'm comfortable answering that question, yes, because I do have a good eyeball on this program. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris Ball, and you talked about his time at ASU. He came to Flagstaff, as most folks know, as being the defensive coordinator at the University of Memphis. So he has, you know, FBS, Power Five, Group of Five experience. He came in here to Flagstaff, Brad, and he had a lot of work to do. There was a, I think, a kind of a break it down to its foundation, build it back up in his image of as to what is a championship football program look like. Not a football team per se, but a program. Mm-hmm. It was a program change. And that takes a little bit of time. It does. And he has made enormous progress, I think, in that direction. And, you know, are we there? Are we halfway, as you suggested? I think that's debatable, and you can look at that from a number of different angles. Personally, I think we are more than halfway there. This is a team that has changed its fundamental paradigm of operations day to day, from how they coach, how they handle their business as a business, if you will, how they recruit, who they recruit, how they conduct themselves both on the field and off the field. I mean, it has been a complete wholesale change in this program, and it's that takes some time. You know, you got to get your guys in, and you got to get buy-in. So it's a work in progress, but I think it's a progress that we're seeing in a tangible fashion.
Yeah, pardon me for stepping all over you, but
no, that's okay.
But Aaron Flugrad, I'll see him on the recruiting trail.
Yeah,
guy handles himself like he is a Pac-12, and quite frankly, I'm surprised he's still in Flagstaff. Nothing against Flagstaff, it's just, man, this kid is, I call him a kid, but this guy handles himself like SEC recruiting guy, like Pac-12, Big 12, name the conference recruiting guy. And he shows up dressed professionally, handles himself in the right ways. He's asking the right questions. The high school coaches here love him when he shows up on campus. And so I think that's a positive. On the field, when you look at it, Mitch, what are some of the positives through a couple of games that you can take? And maybe a player or two that, you know, Brad, if we can just get a little something here on Saturday night, we're going to be okay.
Oh, I love that question. I love that question because I've seen a lot of positives. I've seen a lot of positives on our backline defense, first and foremost. We have a first team, unanimous first team, all Big Sky safety in Morgan Vest. He's from Texas, started his career as a walk-on at South Carolina in the Power Five ranks, went down to JC College and came to Flagstaff, and he is an impact player on defense. And I mean that in both the literal and the kind of the intangible sense.
Sure.
He's a leader and is a real anchor for a defensive unit that at times has been tough strong, bend not break type of mentality. On offense, I'll point to a young man that I'm going to be talking to this week for our radio network pregame show on our player profile. He's an Arizona kid. He's from Anthem, Boulder Creek High School, wide receiver, number 10, Hendrix Johnson. I love the guy because he's the type of wide receiver that appeals to a guy like me. You know, he has a great sense of where the ball is, great route runner, tough and yards after the catch, reliable, dependable, not flashy, just solid as bedrock. Arizona product, as I said, and really loves being in Arizona playing Division I college football for NAU. He's the type of guy that can make a difference, and you get the ball in his hands, good things happen. And one more guy I'll mention, another name you'll know, our starting tight end, Matthew Kempton.
Yep.
Okay. Tim's kid. Tim Kempton's son. Yep. This is a guy who's also all conference. His number's 85. And Brad, I will go to my grave and say, if you throw the ball up in his direction, I don't care who he's up against defensively, there is a better than 75 to 85% chance he's going to go up and get that ball. And one of the most reliable tight ends I've seen in this program in a long time. He's got his dad's hops. He can get off the ground, basketball type hops. Fun kid to watch. Superb blocker at the line of scrimmage. And a leader. Again, a leader of this team. I love those guys. They're the type of guys that can flip a game in a minute. With a play, a spectacular catch, a third and long type of play, or throwing it down the hash to a Matt Kempton, or getting it out on the wing to a Hendrix Johnson, let him do something with the football. Those are some guys right there that I would point to. Arizona products, a couple of them that are difference makers for this team.
Yeah, Chris and his staff are doing a great job in the state of taking those guys and doing well up there. Hey, I appreciate the time and chopping it up with you for a few minutes, Mitch. Have a good show.
Chopping it up. I like that. I like the chopping it up. That's good.
If you steal it, send me a check or something. I'm just kidding.
Absolutely, out of here. Brad.
Good seeing you, Mitch. Stay well.
Good to see you too, man. Be safe.
There's Mitch Stroman, a voice of the Lumberjacks. And we're back with more after this time out.